coming to you live from a remote beachfront studio on the shores of the Pacific in the People's Republic of California. It's 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes, with Bill's esteemed special guest Ed Winchester. So please welcome them for the next hour. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Carnes, Ed Winchester, and 2A Radio.
Hey, welcome to the show, everybody. Ed, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Want to start off with a little bit of information for Quince. The Imperial Beach surf conditions. There are some insane top-to-bottom barrels out there today. Only a few guys even bothered to take it on. And we actually started off with 1 to 2 foot swells that got up late yesterday. As a matter of fact, right about sunset, into 4, 4.5 foot swells. So we had some of the locals out there getting beat up, and it was good stuff. As a matter of fact, this particular stretch, we just saw about a 2.5, 3 foot crest come over this wave right now, just crash right in front of us. And this is some of the best surfing within probably about 40 miles of here.
Oh, yeah, at least. And what's really nice is, you know, the bottom is not littered with rocks or anything. It's a nice, sandy, flat beach. So if you come off your board, you know, you're not going to get destroyed.
I'll tell you what I enjoyed was yesterday the low tide was incredibly low from what I've seen. I was actually able to walk out there about 100 yards, and only my ankles were wet.
Right.
It's neat to see where the beach kind of goes down, and then it almost arcs back up just ever so slightly for another, I don't know, 20 yards or so. Then it goes out. You can walk a long ways out there. And then last night the tide was so high, it was actually all the way up against the rocks, where yesterday you had 100 yards of beach.
Right.
Pretty interesting. Also, you know, as the crow flies straight down the beach, Mexico's about 4 miles.
Maybe a little bit less, yeah.
Less, 3.5 miles, something like that, right? So, I've been here several times, and I've always wanted to walk down there and actually go all the way down to the border, you know, like a Taco Bell commercial. Head for the So, my girlfriend and I just start walking south. Ended up getting all the way to the border, and, there's some difficult access. There's an estuary, you know, the estuary right over here, and there's an estuary inlet,
right.
And at its lowest, it's waist high, and
right.
You know, otherwise you couldn't even afford to cross the thing. We get across there, nobody's down past that. There is the state park actually near the beach, all the way thing you can drive to, but went down there, and I got to tell you, on the other side of the fence, there was a whole bunch of folks from Mexico out there. As a matter of fact, I said hi to a couple of guys that were on the other side of the fence. It's actually just planks. You can literally walk there. And, man, there's music going, and there's taco stands on the beach, and people are partying and having a good time. And me and my girlfriend are the only ones on our side of the border, with the exception of Border Patrol up on a Jeep up in the border state park, keeping an eye on stuff, probably wondering literally what the hell it was that we were doing. But, it was fun. It was fun going down there. And then came back. And I got to tell you, I woke up this morning, and I stood up. And that's when I said, you feel it in the morning. My ankles were killing me. Walking on the beach for a good 7 miles just.
Yep.
My feet are killing me.
Well, your face is killing me, so.
Oh, let's see. We're coming up on break here, and I will respond accordingly. Anyhow, the surf conditions are looking pretty good out there, Quince. It's going to be a beautiful day. I'm sure we're going to have stuff coming out here for the weekend. There you go. For all the tactical surfers out there, we're good to go. Ed, we're coming up on break. You and I are going to handle this whole face comment, and we'll be back right after the break. See you soon.
Coming to you live from the warm shores of the Communist Pacific Palisades, please excuse their conduct, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes and his guest, Ed Winchester. Join them at 1-800-313-9443.
All right, Ed, I've got an email from a listener by the name of Shane, who makes a very good lucid point. And he says, hi, Bill. Based on your comment you made on today's show, this is yesterday, about the terrorists that our military are going up against, I'd like to play the devil's advocate. You commented that they don't put a whole lot of store in life, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree. But if you put yourself into their shoes, and I think it would actually be sandals, wouldn't it?
Could be. Yes. Could be sandals.
If you put yourself into their sandals, let's say, you wouldn't help but admire the tenacity that they have against a far more numerical and technologically superior force. The tactics that they're using are about the only legitimate option that they can employ to have a chance of winning. Otherwise, they might as well give up. Since these are the same people that fought Russia to a standstill, they've been doing something right. I have commented that nothing that these people are doing would necessarily be anything that an American wouldn't do in our country if invaded by superior force, assuming such a military force existed and did indeed attack. When you are fighting a hopeless amount, when you are fighting hopeless odds, you do anything, let me see, I lost my place. You do have to take every advantage you can to win. I think you can agree that being the professional shooter as you are, that would be true. Doing anything less would be inexcusable. Bombing that hits innocent citizens aside, there would be a fraction in America that wouldn't think that liberals who would tell everyone to lay down their arms or otherwise give aid and comfort to the enemy invader as innocent. I happen to be one of those who think that the terrorists that we are fighting are, in fact, by their country's standards, freedom fighters, or perhaps freedom fighters of Iraq, that are continuing to bring the fight. There is no other reason why they should fight so aggressively to get our military off their sand and rocks. It's hard to assume that they are going to be a temporary presence in Iraq, but the Embassy for America, is as large as the Vatican. Oh, wow. I had no idea. I actually have a cool, American Embassy Baghdad pole that a buddy of mine brought me. Tim, our friend Tim, prospect. In other words, the land they use by the embassy is sitting over 100 acres of land, which costs over 1 billion Federal Reserve notes to build. I like the way you put that, Shane. I love your show. Have a great vacation, Shane. Shane, you know, you're absolutely right. Without getting into all of the depth and, I guess the insight, you're absolutely right. We shined over that yesterday, as many people do. But you're absolutely correct, and I believe that everything that these guys do in Afghanistan and in Iraq are precisely the type of things that Shane, you and I and Ed would be doing in a similar situation here on our shores.
However, these guys are scum of the earth. They target women and children, and they target the people who are trying to make their own society where they live a better place. I appreciate the devil's advocate view because it's always that one person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist. I understand that. However, they do not value human life. Their sole goal is to meet Allah with the blood of infidels on their hands so that they can be martyred. And to actually believe that that is an acceptable way of, you know, what they're going to do in this life, because they've been, they're schooled in this Wahhabism, very militant form of Islam that is just, we are the great Satan, and the only thing that is worth doing is trying to attack us in any way possible. That's most of, supposedly, a large population within their community believes that we should live in peace. However, you and I both know the only way they can live in peace is if there's no infidels.
I'd like to take one issue with what you said, Ed, and that is wasabiism, because I'd like wasabi on my sushi.
No, Wahhabi. Wasabi's the green stuff you put on your food.
Yes, and I like that. I really don't know that needs to be bundled up with terrorists. Let's leave the condiments aside, right? Other than that, I agree with everything you said. I really put this when comparing to some of the things you just said, more along the lines of the Palestinians, who will blow up just about anybody to try to get one Israeli. They will take out 15, 20 of their own at a border crossing just to try to get one Israeli military person. And yeah, I agree. You're dealing with people that just don't understand the Western world. Dare I say civilized world. As opposed to where we really don't understand them.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a culture that believes it's okay to throw acid on the face of a woman if she's not covered, you know.
Well, now we're talking specifically more along the lines of Taliban. And you know as well as I do, there's different tribes, there's different factions, there's different all kinds of stuff over there. And, you know, we're talking about the Muslim faith, Islam. And we're also talking about where we have what are considered moderate Islam, which is usually what you would see here in this country. However, I've said on this show before, and I'd actually like to get your piece on it. When it comes to the First Amendment, you have the right to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, things such as that. But the freedom of speech is restricted to a point where you can't go threatening the lives of people or, you know, the old standard, yelling fire in a theater, right? That old standard has been used a million times. I believe that freedom of religion should be held to similar standards, such as where Islam, the true basis of expansion of this entire religion is, if somebody is an infidel, i.e. not Islam, you invite them to your religion. If they don't accept, then you try to force them into your religion. And if that doesn't work, you kill them. You eliminate them. And if that is the mantra of this religion, that, in my view, violates the First Amendment the way that yelling fire in a theater would. Therefore, if that's going to be the way the religion operates, without a referendum, without, say, in Christianity, without a New Testament, as it were, without a New Testament within their holy book, the Quran, then I believe that there might be an entire First Amendment issue in even allowing that religion within the shores of the United States.
Yes, but we have folks in government who want nothing more than to allow this free speech to be detrimental to the government itself. If it wasn't for our guys who are out there doing the good deeds, trying to make the world a safer place, they wouldn't have that First Amendment.
I agree. However, that's the same sort of thing. Recently you saw that Ted Kennedy's essentially on his deathbed. He's got one foot in the grave.
And you know, we cannot use, because we're on some terrestrial stations, we cannot use the adequate words for that guy. And they are trying to make him into such a hero because he wanted health care so long ago. The guy is just morally bankrupt. Now, did you see what he's doing yesterday? He's trying to get the state of Massachusetts to revamp how it chooses his replacement. Because a few years ago, when John Kerry was running for president, he got involved in this bill to say that the governor could not nominate the
couldn't appoint
the replacement because Mitt Romney was the governor and he didn't want a Republican governor appointing a senator from Massachusetts. But now that they have a Democratic governor again, Ted Kennedy's trying to get the law changed back.
Yeah, because they had it changed. He worked hard to change it
right
to where within 5 months there has to be a special election by the people to give an opportunity for people to throw their hat in the ring, start raising funds, campaign, have a special election, and
to keep the Republican governor from being able to appoint.
Which is interesting. Even when he's dead, which, by the way, cheers to that possibility, I gotta tell you, not a big fan of that guy. One moment, guys.
I'm sure the Kentucky family's not a big fan.
Yeah, probably
big
not.
Big fan either.
But that's just my whole entire point, is the people that are so pro-First Amendment, without even considering the whole fire in the theater sort of affair, are the same people that want to use every little angle possible to screw the system. So, exactly, Ted Kennedy did not want Mitt Romney to be able to appoint a conservative, if not an outright, you know, Republican or conservative, to represent Massachusetts in the Senate if John Kerry won the election. And I've got to maintain, that would have been kind of funny if John Kerry won for only one reason. To me, he resembles the mascot for the New England Patriots. And it would have been kind of funny to see that guy meeting the mascots of all the other countries at state dinners. Anyhow, just it served Ted Kennedy to have the law changed years ago. And now it serves Ted Kennedy to have the law changed back now. So the guy's moral compass, I don't think, could get him to the beach, and we are 15 feet away from the sand.
Right.
That's that just self-serving amount of politics and interpretation of the way the law should be and why they should be that way just blows me away. By the way, Quince, just wanted to let you know, a wave just crashed. The whole thing must have been going about 700 yards and had a rideable tube. All right, just want to give you an update of that. I wish I had a little video camera we could stream today's show. It would be great for the tactical surfers out there. So anyhow, we are coming up on the break. We are going to get to what we promised that we would get to coming up in the I'm sure it's going to be the next segment or the one right after that, about which guns, which ammo, if you have a very limited selection, what to look for and why to look for it. And we're going to listen to some listener comments if anybody feels like calling in. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, guys. This is Bill Carnes and Ed Winchester on 2A Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back your hosts, Bill Carnes with Ed Winchester and 2A Radio.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed. Just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little...
Yeah, it was pretty funny. We're sitting here in the corner of the house, which the house is just littered with picture windows, and that song by Will Smith comes on, and Ed and I are kind of sitting here dancing around, arms up there a little bit, and there's this guy, he's probably about, I don't know, 45 or so, surfer, he's heading off of the beach, he's already ridden a couple of waves, he's probably off towards work, rinse off out there, and he's looking at us like, what the hell are these guys with their laptops open, with these headphones on, doing dancing around in that house? And he's just kind of shaking his head like, what is that? Okay, guys, yesterday, towards the end of the show, we proposed this. You're talking a limited handgun selection that you're going to be able to have, like a limited quantity of handguns. What's the one handgun? All right. So you've got to consider several things. First of all, the most important thing to any vehicle is probably fuel. So what kind of fuel are you going to choose? If you're going to have only one vehicle in today's day and age, right now, today, you don't go get one of these natural gas-powered cars or propane-powered. You get some fueled for gasoline or diesel. Right? If you're going to get a weapon of some kind or handgun, what sort of choice? Now, I've argued, Ed, for years, that if you take every defensive type of handgun, we're not talking like a Thompson Contender or a single-action, you know, Colt Peacemaker, something like that. We're talking defensive modern handgun. You boil them all down, take them all out into one gun, and it's my belief that something along the lines of the Glock Model 23, which is a mid-size 40 caliber, holds 13 plus one rounds, is probably the best all-around, considering every little thing, a defensive handgun in the world. And then you've got the Smith & Wesson M&P, mid-size 40, which is pretty much fits the same bill, as does the new Springfield XDM in a midsize and a 40 caliber, which I think actually holds like 16 rounds. So that all around is what I think is something along that line, the best defensive handgun there is. However, if there's only one gun, what do we go with?
I think it would have to be a Glock 17. I just, because of the caliber, replacement ammunition would be easiest to find for that caliber.
Stuck full-size 9mm Glock. So right. Hold up. Holds 17 plus one rounds, except for here in California, it's 10 plus one.
Right.
And, it's full-size. Now, I would probably counter that the next model, which would be the Model 19
and Glock. Now, what's your reasoning? Because I can tell you the easiest cure for that. Go ahead.
My reasoning for the Model 19 is a little bit more in the area of concealability. Right. Not much. You're minus two rounds, but a little bit more for concealability.
I can see that, and it would. And there's a lot of places out there that are doing great reductions where they're actually reducing grip size or stock, if you will, to where you could get a 17 and have it reduced to where it would have the bulk of a 19 in your hand. And that, because you're right, that butt would be harder to conceal, especially, I mean, not on you or I with a little bit of excessive
gear. We're full-size guys. We can carry full-size guns.
I carry a 1911. But you can get that grip reduction done, and so it would have the grip size of a 19, but still have the sight radius of the 17, and I think that's pretty important because that 3/4 of an inch or so you lose in sight radius can be fairly important to you. So.
I disagree. But then that's only because I'm a little bit better shot than you.
You're only a little bit.
But I gotta tell you, Ed and I have actually done some shooting competitions, and he's handed it to me here and there, and I hate when that happens. I hate when I go out there and I do some shooting stuff against, you know, one of my pals, somebody I work with and respect, and they beat me. And all that does is inspire me to train, so the next time we go up against that, I smoke them like a bad cigar. But I understand the sight raise. In that case, why not go with the Glock 34, which has that
let's
Glock 17L that has a 10-inch.
Let's be reasonable. Yeah.
Okay, so we're doing... What we have decided on is a 9mm simple-to-operate handgun, like a Glock, maybe a Smith M&P, something like that. There's a lot of Glocks, so that means there's a lot of parts if yours were to go down. There'll probably be a few out there, probably a few extra magazines here and there. Another option is there's a fair amount of 45 out there, so maybe a 1911, but the 45, even though it's pretty popular, it's not a... really a useful military cartridge now in the days, and also these carry a lot 9mm than they do in 45 now.
Well, most real departments have switched to 40 caliber, and that was a little benefit of that whole thing that we had with the assault weapons ban with the magazines and all that, where a lot of police departments got to trade in their high capacity 9mm.
Their standard capacity 9mm.
Exactly.
Legislatively mandated reduced capacity.
I'm sorry, I've lived in California too long. But they got to trade in those guns, and they got 40s in exchange, and 40 is a much better round for law enforcement.
It's absolutely. As a matter of fact, LAPD has been in a transition period for the last few years, where the new recruits coming through are not getting the 9mm Beretta 92 or M9 for those military designations. They're actually getting a full-size Glock Model 22 in 40 Smith & Wesson. They're not replacing all of the guns across the department. That would be a little expensive, but everybody new coming out is getting a 40 caliber Glock rather than a 9mm Beretta with the same round capacity. Folks, we're coming up on the break. We're going to continue this discussion in the next segment, and we welcome your call in. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
If you didn't think you'd had enough already, please welcome back the black sheep of the RBN family. And your hosts for 2A Radio, Bill Carnes and Ed Winchester. Call 1-800-313-9443. It's a brother and a sister kind of thing. Raise up your hand. Guys, hey, guys.
We'll be right there,
you guys,
Dave.
Back on the air. Oh,
we're refilling. Me and my gang.
Wait. Hey, we're back.
We there? All right. Good time. Okay, here we are. We have we've had this discussion sitting here. We started off with handguns, which is a little bit easier. So you and I are both in agreement. Probably something simple to use. Something that's fairly popular out there in case you need, magazines. You need ammo. You need parts. So probably a Glock 17, Glock 19, something like that, is probably a good choice for if you could only have one defensive handgun. Now, chiming in, we have Todd from Kentucky calling in on line one. Todd, welcome to QA Radio.
Thank you very much. I have a question. I carry a 45-1911, and what I want to do is where can I go, or what would be the advice to you about dry firing? Because obviously the ammo's pretty expensive, and then it takes time. When I can really dry fire in my home or in my home, is there anything you would recommend? Any certain course or any DVD or anything to help us?
I can give you some good recommendations, Todd. First of all, the term dry fire's kind of been done away with. We use dry practice now because you can't really fire a dry gun. And a lot of people are afraid, well, I might damage the gun. That comes from a rim fire, like a .22, because that's going to hit the outer edge where the chamber wall is and make it difficult to chamber the rounds. But actually, a center fire gun, it's good to get some dry presses on there, dry practice with that thing. I actually like, especially after I clean a gun, put it back together, do some dry practice, take it apart, wipe it down again so it's not too greasy and oily, and then I'm done, I'm ready to go. However, dry practice of a gun, what you would want to do is if you've had defensive training with your gun.
Yes, I have.
Use your defensive things. Okay, you present the gun out, you line up the sights, the safety's off, slacks out of the trigger, you press, okay? You stay on the sights for a minute, follow what would be the bad guy down. You're only going to get one press with a 1911. If you're with a revolver, you can get a couple of presses and go from there. Go ahead, Ed. You have something to kick in.
Also, we want to make sure that you're doing this dry practice in a very safe way. Because you're absolutely correct, sir. Bill and I, when we're working with students, we typically teach with dry practice techniques, and we validate what they've learned with live fire. Because you don't have to fire a million rounds to be the best gun handler in the world, but you do need to practice very correct and very proper techniques. Now, I want to make sure that you're doing these dry practice in a safe place in your house where if for some reason you got distracted and the worst happened, nobody would be injured. Now, remember, there's no such thing as an accidental discharge. It's a negligent discharge. And when you're doing your dry practice, that if you get a bang instead of a click, you've been negligent in some way.
That's right.
So we want to make sure that you're doing it safely and without, and you're doing it in a safe place. So you want to make sure there's no ammunition in the room. I don't want you loading up the magazine so it has the proper weight and all that. You want to make sure that the ammunition is completely separate from the weapon, and that if you get distracted, like, you know, somebody comes in and goes, hey, can you take care of this or take care of that? Before you resume dry practice, you perform a chamber check, magazine check, and you verbally tell yourself kind of this mantra of, this weapon is unloaded, there is no ammunition in the room. Because the way you hear about people killing someone when they didn't mean to was they got distracted, they had done some gun manipulation, and now they have fired a round when they intended to only click, and no fast draw contest between friends or anything like that. So.
Right. Okay.
I've got to throw down the safety Fred comment to Ed. Now, Ed Winchester is actually on an episode of Dirty Jobs that they filmed, about 13 months ago and played it last January. And Mike Rowe on Dirty Jobs referred to him as safety Fred. So there's Ed. I kind of look at it like this, Todd. If you're not going to go through all of the needed requirements for safe dry practice, you're probably the same type of person that would reach into an oven, something that's been cooking at 400 degrees without any oven mitts, and try to pull it out and be the dummy to get himself burned. You've got to go through the right processes for doing all this. And it really, ammo's a couple of rooms away. Once we've got that established, we're talking about technique. So let's get on to the technique. Do your defensive techniques, the same thing that you would do if the gun were live and it were an adversary trying to take your life. That's what you dry practice. You just don't get the bang. I have professed for a long time, 85% of the time with your gun is dry practice. There's no ammo in it at all, because that's really where you get better. Once you get better and you're doing that with dry practice, when you finally load the gun and you're out at the range, that is when you actually shoot the same course that you would in your dry practice. If you're dry practicing one thing, and then when you load the gun and you go to the range, you do something different, that's a total waste of time. You're not doing yourself any services at all. You're not getting better. So get better with dry practice. Then when you go to the range, you load up and you do the exact same session, but now you get bang instead of click. Are you talking what the specific techniques would be for dry practice?
Yes. Is there something I could, like a DVD or something, or something that I could, where they show you the, because I've gone through the courses. I've taken defense training and several times, more than once. And I go to the range once a month, once every other month, and I practice. But I would, doing with the situation today in this country, I want to practice on at least every other day. And of course, I can't do that. I don't have the time, nor do I want to shoot, 50, 60, 150 rounds every other day. So, I understand that dry practice, like you just said, will make me a better, improve my skills.
Yes, it will. And dry practice, you can dry practice every day. Just keep in mind, you don't want to practice dry practice more than 20 to 30 minutes a day because you start getting fatigue and you're not going to probably run into too many defensive sorts of situations where you're going to need to shoot for 20 to 30 minutes. If you do, the adrenaline's going to carry you. But when it comes down to it, go ahead, Ed. You want to cut in.
At the same time, you need to be practicing the things that are proper. You carry a 1911, so you need to be practicing all those malfunctions that you can get with an autoloader so
right.
that the clearance of those malfunctions is reflexive. When you get the click that you're trained for, you clear the Type 1, you clear the Type 2, the Type
right.
3. So that those are reflexive. People dread the Type 3. They're like, oh, and, if you do them enough towards just you've cleared it and not even recognized or realized that you cleared it and went right, continued the course of fire, that's mm-hmm. when you understand that, or you've made it to the point that those clearances are reflexive and not, where you have to think your way through them.
Talk to really get to the point here. You're talking about DVDs. I don't know of any DVDs that are out there. I'm sure there are. I haven't looked at them. I know that you can get some dry practice manuals. As much as I hate to be a sponsor of the idea of throwing things to different specific areas sometimes, I know Frontside offers some dry practice manuals, and they have them in different weapon systems. They certainly have a handgun dry practice manual. You could search that online and pick
sure.
one of those up, which is my suggestion to you, Todd.
Okay, great. Yes,
right.
and like you say, when I practice at home, like I do the exact same thing when I'm on the range, and I know enough to clear rooms and stuff like that and practice here. And, and I have a laser on the gun. So even when I'm aiming, I know I press that button. I know I'm hitting the target without pulling the trigger, really.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of the whole laser, Todd, only because it's a mechanical device that can get off of the target. And
uh-huh.
it's kind of like putting a scope on a rifle and never learning to shoot with iron sights. If you're looking at the dot, you're not training with the sights, which
mm-hmm.
when that battery in the laser goes down or it gets cracked or it's off and you need to go back to the sights or you
right.
have a different gun than that one
mm-hmm.
and you're not used to using the sights, you can have trouble. So a little 2 cents on that.
Yeah.
Todd, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, gentlemen. I love your show.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm looking out here in the calm waters behind the Big Surf, and I'm seeing a school of dolphins jumping around. Okay, another option that we've got when it comes to handguns is a 357 Magnum, because that can shoot 357, 38. It can also shoot 38 Super, and if you reset the cylinder to the right spot and you actually use moon clips, you can find a way of getting away with shooting 9mm. Now, neither of those last two are optimum, because a 38 and a 357 are .357 in bullet diameter. The latter two, the 9mm and the 38 Super, are both .355. It'll work in a pinch if you need it to, but it's not exactly built. Let's talk a little bit about shotguns, because that one's easy.
Right.
You and I both agree.
I think the shotgun comment's easy, too. I mean, you get an 870 with two barrels, and you're good to go.
A double-barreled 870?
No.
Under 870?
I'm going to smack you with one of those barrels in a second. It changed. It takes, about a grand total of 15, 20 seconds to change the barrel on the 870?
Yeah,
and,
mate.
you know, have one barrel for slugs, and so that if you can, if you're going to take down a piece of large game, and the other barrel for a buckshot or birdshot or whatever.
You know, I'm happy with shooting slugs out of my smoothbore. What I would consider is a long barrel for bird hunting, and a shorter barrel for two-legged hunting if need be in that event.
In a close quarter area, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, clearing rooms and such. But we both agree, 12-gauge, Remington 870 is an excellent gun, and you don't need to go with the Police Express Magnum 3.5-inch chamber deal. You can if you want, but why bother, really? Yeah.
Well, any other gun, obviously a Mossberg 500 is going to hold up just fine.
You know, a Mossberg 500 will hold up just fine, or a 590 just fine for the average shooter. I got to tell you, in my experience, you know, working at the school, we used to rent Mossbergs and 870s, and Mossberg 590s, the higher end, the better gun. And at the end of the shotgun classes, the four-day shotgun classes, we would repair the Mossberg 590s and clean the 870s.
That's true.
So, although it's good to a point, if you're really going to get serious about your training, and you cannot put like the pistol style grip on a Mossberg,
right,
because it's got the tang mounted safety, which is perfect for a standard shoulder grip, but you cannot legitimately put that tang style safety and have a pistol grip style stock on it. Not that you need one. But yeah, the Remington 870 really seems to fit the bill. You've also got the Benelli Nova and things, but the other thing is with the Remington 870, there's so many of them out there. Again, if you need pieces or parts or anything, and, you know, Armageddon's come, it's going to be easier to find parts for that or the Mossberg out there.
Sure.
Now, that brings us to the rifle. Rifle brings up a lot more debate.
It does.
And it's my contention that your location really kind of puts a question of what you're going to be able to get, or what you should get, rather. I believe that these more standard military and calibers that more military and police would have, because that ammunition is plentiful out there. Obviously, a 223 or military designation 5.56, which you'd see in an AR-15 or a Mini 30, something like, or Mini 14, something like that. Then you go up to what you would shoot out of, say, an AK-47 or an SKS or a Mini 30, which would be a 7.62 by 39, essentially a 308 short. Then you've got the 308 or military designation 7.62 by 51. Those, I believe, are the three main ones to look at. If you want to go on the fringes of either side from there, maybe an odd 6, or on the lower end, the 5.45, which is the kind of the Eastern Bloc sort of military ammo that you'd get in the AK-74, a little bit smaller than the 5.56, however, a little bit more effective if you look at the ballistics of it, a very good design.
And don't forget, I mean, a good old lever action 30-30 would still not be the worst gun to have, because almost any hardware store hardware stores where I live would have it. Even though I live in California, folks, we're up in the desert. We prefer to think of ourselves as far western Nevada because we're on the east side of the Sierras.
Yes, you are. I love my 30-30, and I would easily. I've professed many times that for a practical rifle, and you know, without society having taken a dump, 30-30 is a great gun to have. But we want to talk a little bit about availability of other parts if your gun goes down, ammunition to feed through it, magazines to work for if it's semi-automatic. So let's just really kind of get into the meat of things. AR-15 is a great all-around gun.
Right.
Is it the only gun? Now, you and I both know a fellow by the name of Magic Serbiak. We are – Magic has the utmost respect from guys like Ed and I who know Magic.
Right.
Magic's got his own knife company, Master Bladesmith. He sailed in the World Cup. He is probably one of the most experienced Special Forces guys out there. And the type of Special Forces guy that doesn't really go telling stories. He's
right.
Been there, done that kind of guy. Very large Polish guy. As a matter of fact, he's a cousin of Wally Serbiak. He used to play with the Minnesota Timberwolves. I don't know where he's at anymore. And Magic's also the kind of guy that, if he doesn't know you,
He's going to ride your ass until you get it right. And then once you prove yourself, then he'll open up the friendship wallet. As Magic says about himself, he says, you know, deep inside, I've actually got a big heart, but deep, very, very deep. So that's kind of
good. I'm still not really sure that he has a heart, but
he does. He does. It's very deep, deep. Anyhow, back to Magic. One time I posed this question to him, and his answer without a hiccup was the Galil. Now, and I love the Galil. The Galil is the Israeli modified version on a Kalashnikov action, on an AK action, that's been refined. It's now been machined out, and it's an excellent gun. You can't import those into the U.S. anymore. They are here. However, there is a company, and I'm rushing my words because I see we're about 50 seconds from the break here. It is an excellent gun. However, finding parts, if it goes down, the advantage is it's an incredibly hardy gun. But it shoots the 5.56 or 223. We're going to continue this rifle debate after the break. But you've also got Mini 14s. There's a lot of those out there if you go with that caliber. And you've actually got some of the Kel-Tecs out there. But again, we're talking about guns. You don't want them to be so specialized you cannot find replacement parts if you need them. And let's continue this discussion after the break, shall we?
See you then.
All right, guys. We'll be back. Stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes and Ed Winchester on 2A Radio.
Man, just like a long lost friend, you ain't seen in a while. Can't help but smile.
This is what happens when you vacation on the beach with friends and are still responsible for a live radio show. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes and his special guest, Ed Winchester. Please excuse their conduct. I mean, they are on vacation.
Greatest lover and a dancing machine. I get loud. I get proud. And it gets worse.
All right, folks. So we're back onto the rifles. We talked about the 223/556. Next up in caliber would be the 7.62x39, and without a doubt, the top two that come to mind are the AK-47 and the SKS.
Right.
Even the states that have the, like the California sort of laws, the SKS is where it's at because, you can't have more than 10 round capacity. And those guns have an internal box magazine loaded with a stripper clip, and it's pretty fast, actually.
And, you know, and you, if you have an SKS, you probably paid less than $100 for it. You leave it under the seat of your truck. And it gets banged around. It's not going to be the end of the world.
It actually is a very good car gun. An SKS is an excellent car gun. Those of you who listen to the Dave Champion Show at 3 o'clock Central Monday through Friday, you know that Dave prefers the AK-47, which is great. But if you don't want to put all the time and effort into building an excellent AK-47, the SKS, for a cheaper version carrying around on the gun, if your car gets jacked or if the gun gets jacked, you're out, you know, put everything into it, ammo, whatnot, maybe $150. It's not that bad. Okay, then up in the scales of 308 or the military designation, 7.62x51, I think without a doubt, without much argument, when you're talking about reliability and there's a quantity of them out there, is the M1 platform, the M1A, the SOCOM 16, they have the SOCOM 2. Not a huge fan of the SOCOM 2 because they have so much stuff at the end, it's so heavy. You have a SOCOM 16.
I have a SOCOM 2, and part of the reason was those extra shields give you a little bit of standoff so that you don't overheat the optics, because those things can get pretty hot if you're really banging away. And sometimes a gunsmith we both know and like has seen optics that got overheated because they were sitting right on the SOCOM 1s real close to the barrel.
Yes, that's right. But I think without a doubt, if you're going to go with the 308, that's one to consider. I am a big fan of guns that aren't too damn heavy sitting out there. And Kel-Tec just came out with a Bullpup 308 that actually runs off the FAL magazines. Excellent gun. But you're talking about almost $2,000. $1,850, I think, is the retail price. Plus, you're dealing with, there's not very many of them out there if something goes wrong. So although a very promising gun, we're looking for kind of the Armageddon answer here. And I think if you're going to go with that, with the caliber 308 or 7.62x51, you got to go with the M1 platform, M1A, something along that line.
The only drawdown is you can't really break it down very easily to throw it in a backpack, so it's a little bit more you know, concealed if you need to. Like, you could throw an AR in a backpack pretty easily, or one of the Kel-Tex in a backpack pretty easily. So you need to think about that. And, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have an extra rifle laying around, in 22 long rifle, because of, you could quietly take small game and stuff and keep yourself fed and carry a large amount of ammunition in a pretty small package.
Yeah, I'm a 10-22 guy myself. Guys, we're coming up towards the end of the show. Ed, appreciate you over here. I want to shake your hand. It's great having you all weekend long. Kind of you having me here at the house, me having you here on the show. And it's been fun. Unfortunately, we got to head back to the desert this weekend. But it's a great show. Great week.
Glad to see you.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. I hope you enjoyed the show this week. We are coming up on the end of probably the funnest week of radio I've done here on 2A. And I appreciate everybody out there and all your comments on the emails. Keep them coming. Folks, have a great day. Thanks.
See you, bud.
Thanks for joining us. Bill and Ed will be back tomorrow. Please email your comments to bill@2aradio.com. Unreal, guys. Unreal.